Atram karne pishyana devaha Atram pashe maksha bhirya chatraha Stirai rangai ispushtu vagum sastanubihi Yashema devahitam yatayuhu Swastina indra vrittashravaha Swastina pusha vishwavedaha Swasti nastarksho arishtanemihi Swasti no brahaspatir padatu Om shanti shanti shantihi. So we're in the Alata Shanti, chapter 4. And I think that we did do 9 and 10. I'm going to start with 10. We haven't been in class for a long time, so... I might go back a little bit. Do you too? Jara marana nirmuktaha Jara marana nirmuktaha Sarve dharma subhavataha Sarve dharma subhavataha Jara maranam icchantaha Jara marana icchantaha Jivante ten manishya Jivante ten manishya Jara marana nirmuktaha Sarve dharmaha subhavataha Jara maranam icchantaha Chivante ten manishaya. Okay. Different type of vocabulary here. Sarve dharmaha. All the dharmis. Sometimes we say all the dharmis. All the jivas. Means all the atmas. Really, there's only one atma. But then from the standpoint of the upadis, the conditioning adjuncts, this body, mind, sense, organs, I'll say, I'm a self, you're a self, you're a self, you're a self. That's what it is. It's in plural. All of these atmas. The recognition in the end is going to be there's really only one atma. There's only one self that's illumining all of these upadis. But from the standpoint, it's the upadis. Upadis means conditioning adjuncts. It's body, mind, sense, organs. The jiva, this individual... The jiva is really that one non-dual atma plus ajnanam, plus ignorance. The ignorance belongs to the mind in the sense that your mind takes your being, the conscious being that you are, to be one with this body, mind, sense, organs. And so I have my atma, I have myself, you have yourself, you have yourself, yourself. And so because of ajnanam, because of all of the individual minds, there's the sense of many atmans. So here, and also this is a rebuttal or a negation of the Sankhya Yoga. Sankhya Yoga and the Vaisheshikas, what this situation that we're in right now. The Sankhyas actually believe that there are many Atmas. Each person has their own Purusha. Purusha, each Purusha is identical in a sense of the Atma, limited, limitless Satchit, limitless conscious being. That's the Sankhya position. They also feel like this prakriti they call pradana, that's made of sattva, rajas, and tamas, it's what we mean by maya, is itself beginningless. And each purusha, each individual purusha, is beginningless. And the thing is, between the Sankhya and the Advaita Vedanta, the definition of the purusha from its own standpoint is limitless satchit, limitless conscious being. They leave off the word ananda. They don't say satchit ananda because they're defining ananda as the positive experiences that we have in the world that have always have the counterpart part of the negative experience. And so therefore they won't use the word ananda or fullness, joy, happiness, anything positive for the nature of the Atma because they think of it only something positive, the positive spectrum of experiences as being part of sattva, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Mm-hmm. So they will only say that the purusha, your purusha, is limitless conscious being. So we also say the Atma is limitless conscious being. They will say that each person has its own Atma, its own Purusha. So your Purusha is limitless conscious being. Your own unique Purusha is limitless conscious being. Each Purusha is exactly the same, but that each one has their own limitless conscious being. Anything that has to do with, that exists within duality comes from the Pradhana, the Prakriti. So all of Gaudapada here really is answering what the Vaisheshikas and what the Sankhyas have to say in terms of the nature of reality. The Sankhya will say there are many Purushas. Each Purusha is itself timeless. It's not subject to any type of change. The other reality is what they call the Pradhana, similar to our Maya. Pradhana is made of central rajas and tamas. It is responsible for the manifestation, the cyclical nature of the creation, right? And it itself is beginningless. The Pradhana is beginningless. And therefore, since it's beginningless, they say that the Pradhana is unborn, right? That it's not been born. But if its nature, and so this is what the this is what all this debate that we're discussing, the Vedantin will say, if the Pradhana, the material cause for the manifestation of everything that exists within duality, including the five elements and all of the different parts of the jiva, you know, the buddhi, the mind, the sense organs, the organs of action, the physical body, all of these things that make up, that allow us to experience duality, the whole manifestation of duality, very similar to how we see Maya projecting. They say that Pradhana, sometimes called Prakriti, is itself unborn. Okay. Now, so this is what we're moving into. There's a problem here. If you say that which is has never been born, then it has for its Prakriti here being used in the previous verse, being used as its very nature, its svabhava, is that it has never been born. And yet, if it's never been born, it now is born into, it goes through the birth of becoming this creation. So how can something whose nature is free of birth, how can that thing which is free of birth be born in terms of its effect? Okay. So this is, we'll get into this now, but I'm just kind of backtracking to make you remember kind of where we are. So here now in this verse, the question is, what are we talking about here? Why is this even important? Why is this even coming up? What's at stake? Well, what's at stake is your nature, is who you are. You know, that's what's at stake. So here, he's citing why we were going through all of this logic. So he says, sarve dharmaha. Dharmaha means atmas, the atmas here, the dharma, that which thing actually is, its own nature. So all of these dharmas, you're a dharma, you're a dharma, you're a dharma, all of these dharmas, all of these jivas, means all of these atmas, are jara madana niramuktaha. They are by nature free of birth and death. Jara means old age, and madana means death. So when we say that free, you are free by your nature, you are free of old age and death. There's what we call the shed bhava vikaras, the sixfold modifications that every living entity goes through. And he's only listing two of them here, old age and death, because those are the ones you don't like. Those are the ones you don't like. But actually, the sixfold are you're being born, generally, you take birth, then asti, then you exist, then you grow, vardana, you take birth, now you exist, that's two. Then you grow, start to grow up. Then you go through puberty. Yeah. Then you become old, and then you decay and die. Those are the shed bhava vikaras. Even a fruit goes through this. And any living entity is going to go through these six modifications. So it's fine that we're born, you know, we're born and now we exist and now we're growing up and, you know, we're becoming adults and all of this, that's fine. But then Then we get old and we decay and we die. That's the one that we don't like. So he says, all these dharmas, all these dharmis, all of these beings are jara, old age, manana, death, niramukta, completely free of. Mukta means they're completely liberated, just by your nature. These things for you do not exist. Okay, your being is free. How, in what way? By its very swabhava. So the swabhava, this analysis of swabhava we did in verse 8, in verse 9, the analysis of what we mean by swabhava or prakriti. Swabhava means that the very nature, your very nature is something which is free from death. And he went through a whole unfoldment of all of the different types of swabhava. Right? One is by your very nature, even in nitya, something that in this creation, something can't change its nature. Like for instance, there's different kinds, like there's one's called akrita, for something to be natural to yourself, like water, for instance, it will always flow, or water will always find its own level. Birds are born with wings so that they can fly. Humans are born with legs so that they can walk. That's natural to them. They also talk about type of prakriti or type of swabhava that as a yogi you can gain. By doing all types of tapas and upasana and things, you can gain certain yogic siddhis. And they say, just in the Puranas, and just by, as been handed down to us in the Agama traditions, if through so much tapas and upasana, as you gain siddhis, yogic siddhis, they're really siddhis that exist within Ishwara, you gain those. Once you gain them, you never lose them. So that's a certain type of some siddhi. It's a certain type of swabhava that's actually gained, but once gained, it's never lost. We don't know about that. We only know about it through the tradition. Right? Unless you yourself have gained that siddhi. If you've gained that siddhi and you take another burst, you'll still have that siddhi. Okay. So these type of siddhis that are there. Then there's this other types, these type of things that are that they call your very nature, things that don't change, that you can't lose. If things couldn't hold their nature, we would have no laws. There would be nothing stable, you know. Humans would not be humans. They'd be humans for a minute, and then they'd be something else. There's nothing holding its nature. So the point that Gaudapada is making by that previous verse is we accept that things, even in Maya, even in this level of Maya, that things hold their nature. They don't go against their nature. What to say of something that itself, it does not exist in time, is, but is not subject to time, is not subject to time and space, that which is has absolute reality, the very adhishtana, what to say about that, holding or not holding its nature? And so even in the Sankhya, when they're talking about the absolute realities are all the infinite individual purushas and the beginningless prakriti. So this beginningless prakriti, which they say is ajam, this is the key word. The prakriti which is responsible of sattva, rajas, and tamas for manifesting this creation and giving you this body, mind, sense organs, soul, body, mind, sense organs, they say that prakriti itself is ajam, is unborn. And the problem is, if its swabhava, its nature, is to be unborn, means it has never been born. It can now not be born in as an effect. What by its nature remains unborn, is unborn, can now not all of a sudden be born, because that goes against its swabhava. Okay, so that's what we're working toward. So here he says, from what we're looking at here and establishing is that every dharma, every atma, by its nature, is free, just by its nature, is free from old age, death, etc. Jara, manana, niramuktaha. Then he says, the jara, manana, ichantaha, all of these dharmas, all of these jivas, which are in reality, completely free of birth and death and everything in between, right? Jara, manana, ichantaha, desiring, imagining birth and death, old age, just by imagining it, They, chavante, they fall into that, right? Tan manishya, by the mere thought. By the mere thought. Mm-hmm. Nothing happens really. Mm-hmm. You're, if you're falling into it, just because that's your imagination, right? You're becoming that through your imagination, not in reality. It's like that, the thing is, Gaudapada is always coming from the nature of who you really are. Who you really are is the Atma. Okay? Now the Atma has, this is just an aside, the Atma has Maya from the Advaita. Now the Atma has Maya as Mithya, which is very natural, it's natural expression. But because it's mithya, right, it doesn't bring about any change to the adhisthana, to yourself at all. So now, that being so, look at what happens to you. Okay. You're just sitting, innocently sitting around, driving your car maybe, and your mind gets lost in a daydream. You just get lost, gets lost just like that. It gets lost in a daydream. As it's lost in the daydream, there's a whole reality now that you're living in. The daydream is manifest. You've taken a form in that you. You have taken a form. Your being, who you are, the me, is now finds itself to be this person, right, who is bound by birth and death and living in this situation with all of these different raga dveshas and a whole world that is taking place, right? So now, you've become that. You become that from the standpoint of this imagination, not from the standpoint of your svabhava. From the standpoint of your svabhava, your nature, absolutely nothing has happened. That's what we mean by maya, that's what we mean by nitya. We actually experience this all the time. You experience it in your imagination, in your daydreams, in your actual dreams, you know? This type of identification is something that's taking place all of the time within Maya, not within me. Now, if it were taking place within me, really, if I were really this self that I am, were really becoming that, I would be modifying into that experience, right? So I would then be becoming a person who is growing old and then dying. I would be modifying, myself would be modifying into that. But what we find, really, upon analysis, and then if we use the dream example, which is so good, or the just using your own imagination and your daydreams, the fact is that your being is never changing at all. Nothing is ever happening to you. There is no modification going on of any kind. But this is the viveka that has got to take place. Because you are lost in the maya of this world. You're lost in the maya of your body, mind, sense organs. Right? Yourself, okay, there's another little aspect to this. I've spent some time in the meditation on this. From your standpoint of just simple you, your being, right? You are not doing anything, and you're also not knowing anything. I don't know if this was something that you could follow in the meditation. This is the whole thing. Consciousness, which is ajam, which is unborn, right? Beginningless from the standpoint of the Shastra, from the standpoint of the Vedanta Shastra. Conscious beings, free from time. It's unborn. It's changeless. It's not objectifiable. It doesn't ever become anything. Now the question is, does consciousness itself know anything other than itself? What is it going to know? Things are known. See, this is the thing. We think of consciousness, this me, as a knower, as though I am doing an act, I am performing an act of knowing. But I'm actually not performing any act of knowing at all. I am the, my experience, my self-experience, is the knownness that all things enjoy. Like anything that comes into my way, anything that comes into my sphere of my sense organs, every experience I have, including the sense organs, and including the thoughts and their own emotions, everything, every experience, without any exception, every one of those experiences are known. You can't have an experience that isn't known. Okay? Where does the knownness come from? Is the knownness that I experience, like this is known, you are known, you are known, everything, my thoughts are known, my emotions are known, there's nothing that's not known. Where does the knownness come from? From the standpoint of the jiva, me, myself as a conscious being, this body, mind, sense organs, I say, as a mind, I am the knower, you are the known. I take on the word, the ER, the knower, that er, you know, seer, hearer. I take on that ER, right? In reference to all of these things being known, because I don't take myself to be the things being known. But actually, the only experience that I'm having, I'm not having an experience of a knower, I'm having the experience of things being known. See that? Try to find the knower there. There's no knower. There's just knownness. Now what I need to do is differentiate the things being known from the knownness itself. And why we do that is because all thoughts, all perceptions, all objectifications come and go in knownness. The knownness, the self-evident knownness, never comes and goes. I am that self-evident knownness, that self-evident me, which everything that comes into my wake enjoys. And so that's why this whole mitya, this whole maya upadhi, that makes for the whole in creation, it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known, because that's its very svabhavit, the very truth of it is the knownness of my being. Right? But I am not doing anything. I'm not knowing anything. These things are known, so when they're there, they're known. But from my own nature, from my own standpoint, I just simply am conscious being. So I never get tired. I never get bothered. Yeah. I remain ever the same. And the only way that something is known is because from its own standpoint, it's known. But if I get rid of it, the thing that is known from its own standpoint, all that's left is me, the self-evident knownness. And so this becomes, once this is understood, you have to, it's not, this isn't just intellectual, it is intellectual, and I'm pointing to something for you to see. But this is actually the reality of your experience. Who you are just remains as you are. You're not doing anything. Not doing anything, you're not knowing anything, but you're the very being because of which all things are known. Right? And so that's why we say you are, as Ishwar, you are Sarvajnaha. You are all knowledge. There is no other knowledge. There's an accumulation of things that come into knownness, but there is no other knowledge. You are the only knowledge that there is. Because knowledge requires knownness, you are that knownness. And that's never not there. You know? And so here, it says, how can this me fall into this, I am this jiva, I am being, I fall into this identification? Well, that's exactly what happens. The objects that are really part of this creation, the maya, all maya, it's body, mind, sense organs, all maya, right? From its own standpoint, it is known. From its own standpoint, it makes a differentiation between knower and known. It identifies with me, the conscious being, but from its own standpoint. And so, because of ajnanam, I fall into being a jiva, being somebody who's subject to birth and death, because this body, mind, sense organs and these experiences that are there have, by their svabhava, birth and death. See what I mean? By their nature, they have birth and death. By my nature, I have no birth and death. I have no change. Nothing is happening to me at any time, ever. So, that's fine for me. I have no problem. I'm not bound that I don't need to be liberated. From my stance, my own standpoint as an awareful, as awareness, the me that I am, I'm not bound, I don't need to be liberated, I simply don't have a problem, there's nothing going on. I just simply am. Yeah. The ones that the one that has to be liberated is the one who takes itself, herself, himself, to be bound. That has only to do with the mind, which is part of this whole manifestation. The mind says, I am bound because I have fallen into the trap from the standpoint of the mind. Now, another thing, this is Gaudapada. You have to recognize that he doesn't see this Maya as something different. This Maya is the Maya that projects this whole creation is natural to me. It has no, it's natural to me, to my nature. This Maya is me. It's mitya, and so it doesn't bring about any change to me, but it certainly doesn't belong to anybody else. So this mitya mind is my mitya mind. This mitya mind has ajnana. And so it has fallen, you know, I've tumbled into this mistaken identity and taken on all of these attributes, right, just through my thoughts. It's only my thoughts. My thoughts are born of ajnana. Right? So I have fallen into, and even if you say thoughts, the thoughts themselves, that's what I was trying to point out in the meditation, the thoughts themselves are Maya. Now, you know, there's thoughts upon thoughts, right? There's an experience that you have, like say you have a sorrowful thought, you have the experience of the sorrowful thought, that's manas, and then the buddhi, the different level of mind or the intellect, comes in and says, oh, I am having such a sorrowful thought. Okay. Now, this is mitya manas, right? And so is this, I am having such a sorrowful thought. That's a commentary on the experience. So we have experiences and commentaries on the experience. Whether it's an experience like I'm sorrowful, I'm happy, and this perception is taking place, or whether it's a commentary on the experience, right? All of those experiences are enjoying knownness, are enjoying me, the knownness which is me. Whether it be the commentary, you know, which is born of ajnanam, or the experience, which is just a product of Ishwara. You see that? So, I am the changeless knownness of every experience, whether it be the experience or commentary on experience. I'm always present. I'm always itself. Nothing is ever happening to me at all. But there's a lot happening to this mind. This mind is confused. And this mind is confused, and in its confusion is creating a lot of suffering. And so because it's creating a lot of suffering, there has to be a way out of that suffering. So it creates suffering because of a beginningless ajnana. So that's how he's talking about that. It's here. So, now Gaudapada is saying, this is the problem that we find ourselves in. There's really, all of these atmas are really only just one atma. There's really only just one self. In reality, nothing is happening because that self, the self that you are, is ajam. All the shastra says it's ajam. It's free from birth. It's free from change. It's not something that can be objectified. And it just needs to be pointed out to you if we were to recognize. That's the reality of it. And what if you were to think, like in the Sankhya, that this atma or this world, you know, actually goes through a change? It actually is born. Then what happens? What happens if you think that? Then where is there any reality? Where is there any self? Where is there any adhishtana? Where is there any being at all, any existence at all? So that's what now he's moving into. So let's just look at that first little bit. He's trying to explain this now for several verses.
Which verse?
11.
11.
Karanam yasya vai karyam, karanam yasya vai karyam, karanam tasya jayate,
Karanam tasya jayate.
Jayamanam katam ajam.
Jayamanam katam ajam.
Binnam nityam katam chatat.
Binnam nityam katam chatat.
Karanam yasya vai karyam. Karanam tasya jayate. Jayamanam katam ajam. Binnam nityam katam chatat. He says, Karanam yasya vai karyam. For whom, talking really about the Sankhyas, for whom the cause, the karanam, itself is the effect. In other words, for somebody who believes that the cause, the ultimate cause, actually is the effect, it becomes the effect, okay? Then for that person, tasya, karanam tasya, because for that person, jayate is born. Right? Because, just think about it, if somebody says the cause, what is the cause? And this is what the Sankhyas will say about prakriti. The cause itself becomes, the prakriti itself morphs into, modifies, it's called parinama, it modifies, it changes itself into the effect. Okay, so prakriti becomes the changes into this manifest creation. So he says here, for someone who says that the karanam is the karya, like the prakriti becomes this world, then for that person, that karana, that cause, is born. It is now born into the world, to become the world. It changes. It becomes the world. It's born to become the world. Okay. Then he says, Sankhya also says in their philosophy that that prakriti is ajam, is birthless. Because it's beginningless. So that prakriti itself is ajam, is free of birth. Okay? So he says, we meant knowing that about the prakriti, he says, jayamanam katam ajam. How can something which is free of birth be born? Jayamanam is being born. How can something which is ajam by nature, how can that be born? So jayamanam katam ajam. And he says another thing, binnam nityam katam chatat. And how can that, which is said to be nitya, eternal, how can that binnam, how can that divide? Because the whole prakriti manifests into a multiplicity of duality. So it like blasts into, you know, the non-dual prakriti, and it's non-dual in the sense it's in what we call the sattva rajas and tamas are staying, it's in not non-dual, it's in unmanifest condition. How can this unmanifest prakriti explode itself, binnam, become so diverse, exploding itself into the creation? How would that be possible? You know? If it's ajam, it can never change. Because by its svabhava, this is why we're going back into the svabhava, by its svabhava, by its nature, it is free of birth. If it's free of birth, how can it be born? Right? And now the problem is, if you say that it's born, how can it be nityam? Nityam means free of time, timeless. Because once it's born, it enters into time, right? It enters into duality. So how can these things, this doesn't make any sense. How can you make this work, is the idea. So the Vedanta won't accept prakriti. Doesn't accept prakriti at all. It'll say, then this is what we're talking about here. The Sankhya looks at prakriti as matter, as something which is real, as something which actually exists. And they say that this prakriti is real and it is ajam, it is unborn, means beginningless, and eternal. It's nityam, it's unborn, and it's nityam, eternal. Okay. That's how they talk about it. But the prakriti itself is continually going through modification.
So everything about the Prakriti, in fact, you say that it's unborn, but how can it be born when it's, how can it itself be unborn when it by its nature is continually being born? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So at one point, at what point do you say that it's unborn? Right? So you can say infinitely, it's continually being born. Beginninglessly, it's continually being born. And you say, in that way, it's nityam, it's continually being born. Okay. But if it's continually being born, that means it's coming, everything about it is continually coming into being and going out of being because it's continually changing. If that's the case, then what is its, where is its substance? What is its substance? It gets back into this, if you have any, say you have any object within time and space, because now with the Prakriti, we have all this everything about the Prakriti, sattva, rajas, and tamas, is going through a constant modification. So the question comes, what is it that is going through the modification? What is it that remains untouched? Because if you have, let me put it like this, if you have any object in the universe, anything that exists within time and space, that has a namarupa, that has a particular form, okay? That form goes through, continual modification, okay? It becomes this, and then it becomes this, and then it becomes this, and then it becomes this. But what is it? What is the being that is becoming all of these things? Where is the being? Because all of these things, as they go through a change, any given change, they negate what which was previously there. So the previous moment no longer is. For anything that goes through a change, the previous moment doesn't exist anymore. And the moment that it's going to change into doesn't exist either. Right? And so, where do you find in the Prakriti that which actually exists? Because from beginningless time being born, it's continually negating itself. That's why we use an example. You use an example like our good old clay pot. If I take a lump of clay and I make it into a pot, and then I make it into a plate, and then I make it into a tumbler, and then I make it into a ball. It can go on and on and on. These things are continually being born, right? The pot is born, the plate is born, the tumbler is born. That's fine. As long as there's something there that allows that is. Because the pot is negated by the plate, right? When any change negates the existence totally of the prior thing. So something has to exist there for all of these dynamics to go on. And that thing has to itself be unborn in order for it to be. If it's not unborn by nature, then it itself is continually negating itself. So in the end, you have to come to something which actually is. You can't end up with something that comes into being and goes out of being. So now you're saying that the Prakriti, the Sankhya will say, the Prakriti is unborn, but it's coming into being and going out of being. So then Shankara asks, well, what part remains unborn and what part comes into being and goes out of being? He used the example as, you know, you can't, if you take a chicken, it's a kind of awful example, but you take a chicken, you can't cook half of it and then have the other half lay eggs, you know. So you can't have a Prakriti, what part is remaining unborn, and the rest of it is being born. And that's not what they say. The whole Prakriti is continually manifesting, and at the same time they say it's unborn. What part is unborn? If the whole Prakriti, the sattva, rajas, and tamas, comes into manifestation and goes out of manifestation, what is there to give it being? Because every part of it is coming into being and going out of being. Where's the adhishtana? Where's the substance? That's what they're saying. You can't find the substance. Now the Vaisheshikas attack this very problem, the Sankhya. Because the Sankhya says that This whole karya, this whole effect comes out of the cause. Upadana, the material cause, when the material cause is unborn. But the Sankhya will say that, the Vaisheshikas will say that's not possible. You know, because all of these changes that the Prakriti goes through continuously negates itself. There's no underlying being to be found there. And they will say is, that's why you have to have ultimate particles that never go through any change, that are limitless and that are beginningless and unborn and remain exactly as they are. They go through another whole set of problems. See what I mean? So,
are we going to get to an answer pretty soon?
The problem is that for the Prakriti with these things and the Vaisheshika, there is no answer. It's just that they negate each other. They negate each other because they can't solve this problem.
There's no concept of satya.
No, there's no satya mitya. So they can't solve the problem of change within the creation. Because if every part of the creation, everything in the creation is subject to change, coming into being and going out of being, then there's nothing that has been. There's no being for the things that come into being and go out of being to depend on, because something that comes into being and goes out of being has non-being on either side. Comes into being, it goes out of being. So that thing doesn't really exist. In the end, it has to have something that it depends on for its being. So that's why he says, well, what part of the Prakriti remains for these then, for the Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas to depend on for it to go through its modifications? Otherwise, the bottom line is there's just non-existence there and there is no Prakriti. That's what happens. It ends up in, it's just a false logic. There's nothing, no way for the Prakriti to exist because there's nothing in it that does exist, and then therefore we wouldn't be experiencing anything. And so the whole idea of the Prakriti falls apart.
Yeah. So the idea of Purusha in that system, because they talk about Purusha, Prakriti, as
that's going to come later for them. And see, even when they're saying that if they talk about birth and death and all of these things can only happen within the Prakriti. Because it's only within the Prakriti that there's change. The Purusha never changes at all. Then there's a whole other problem that's going to come up around that. Purusha never changes. There's limitless number of Purushas. How can the Purusha, which itself is just conscious being, have any relationship with that Prakriti? And how does this Prakriti, which in its very essence has no being, mm-hmm. how can it even go in through any process at all, let alone be experienced? Mm-hmm. So, that's good enough. We'll move on. This is going to be how it is for us.
How much longer? Well, the
I'm sorry, it's
really
not
good.
Easy to teach it either.
Well, part of the problem is that because we don't really know Sankhya, I mean, it's not really an extent.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not like for us, like we're going to be all Sankhya, probably.
No, I know, but that's why I kind of didn't want to teach this chapter, because what this chapter is it's taking all these darshanas, the Shad darshanas, you know, in addition, some Buddhism and the Shad darshanas. Oh, the Shad darshanas all accept the Vedas. The Bauda doesn't accept the Vedas as a pramana. But he's taking all of these darshanas and dismissing them through logic. That's what this fourth chapter is about. And so,
I mean, it's a little like materialism, the Sankhya, in a certain way.
It is.
If you leave out the Purusha.
If you leave out the Purusha. Exactly. If you leave out the Purusha.
You say there's some kind of fundamental matter that transforms into everything, but then whenever you look for the fundamental matter, you never can find
it. You can't find it, because it can't be there.
Yeah.
It can't be there within duality, because everything within duality comes into being and goes out of being, so there's no fundamental matter to find.
Well, how
so
they
it's purely metaphysical.
Are we
going to
say our prayer? Yeah.
There's only consciousness in the end.
No, I mean, their theory
the
is purely metaphysical. There's nothing to it. It's only in their mind.
Yes?
Yeah, that's true.
Sankhya, I mean.
Yeah, doesn't make
kind of making light of it.
You're making light of it, but in fact, it's kind of true. The Sankhya philosophy is not strong. It's of all the darshanas, in some ways, it's the most powerful because of the Purusha being so close to the Atma. But philosophically, in reference to the Prakriti and all of that, it's very weak. And even having more than one Purusha doesn't hold up.
It's prayer time.
Huh? That's how this class went over today. Okay. I know. Well, we'll teach it for a while and see. Maybe we'll have to stop teaching it.
I would be happy also.
Why don't you just, we just read all the verses in one class and just commentate on all of them.
I don't know if it's a good prayer.
Why don't we do our prayer? It just didn't feel right. So like,
yeah, it doesn't feel like the end of the class.
Swastik prajabhyah paripalayam tam nyayena margena mahim mahishah go brahmane yashuvamastu nityam loka samasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshatu karjanyah pratidheshasya shalini desho yamsho parahitah Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kaschit dukkha bhag bhavet Atato ma sudgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Nityorma amitam gamaya Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha
You know what, it gets a little wordy and it doesn't resolve. You know what I mean?
I know. I think a lot of it's just my problem teaching it, but that's also true what you say.
It resolves eventually. It's just a long process.
It's a long haul.
I get tired.
But I don't know. I have Shraddha that this was designed for a reason. And there's something...
You want to stick it out.
About it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, kind of
and to shortcut it or find it, you know, let's rethink how these guys came up with it. No offense to anybody, but
there's a lot in
a position to say we know better.
Well, he's making the same point verse after verse, right?
No.
Essentially.
Well, there's subtle differences where you have to look at it like there's a series of verses that are dealing with this topic. Mm. They're unfolding the topic. But when I'm teaching it, sometimes I get stuck on trying to get that verse to click into exactly what it's trying to say. And sometimes it takes me a while to get there to where I feel satisfied that the vision of that verse has happened collectively in our mind and in my own mind. Something has to take place. And so I think it's hard for me to teach. It's a hard text
to
teach.
Does Gaudapada have other commentaries aside from this Mandukya or...
No, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just work on it, you know, and
yeah.
Just work away on it, and then I'll read more farther ahead and see if there's a place to take a break, because this is a long, long text.
But don't get us wrong, we're very supportive.
Also, there was a lot of, like, straight, at the beginning of class today.
Yeah, the first verse, I thought, was completely... very clear and very just Vedantic, right?
Yeah.
And then when he starts getting into the logic of, because he's sort of going through this whole logic of cause and effect, and you know, either you take the cause is the same as the effect, or you say it's different than the effect. If you say it's the same as the effect, that can't work, and there's a logic that he tries to set out. If you say it's different, that also can't work, and there's a logic. And so, essentially...
That's the Vaisheshika's...
Which is very similar, actually, to what Nagarjuna did in the Buddhist, although the conclusion in the end was different, but it's how he defeated all the other philosophical positions.
Yeah, but all of them defeat themselves, actually. That's what Gautama said. They all defeat themselves, because Vaisheshika will defeat the Sankhya, and the Sankhya will defeat the Vaisheshika, and the Vedantin will just say, yeah, go at it, it's fine what you're saying, we accept you defeat each other.
Exactly, yeah.
We don't accept any, either one of those positions.
Could you remind me again? I'm sorry. The Vaisheshikas, they're not Buddhists.
No. There's six what we call Shuddha Darshanas. There's six Darshanas, philosophical systems. We just call them Darshanas. There's six of them that are what we call Astikas. They accept the Vedas as a Pramana. And then there's some that are Gnostikas. They don't accept the Vedas as Pramana. They all come out of the same soil, same India. But some of them, like the Charvaka, which are just materialists, Dada, the Buddhists, and the Jains, which are very ancient tradition, they don't base what they have to say on the Vedas. So there's six that are based on the Vedas. They're the Vaisheshika, the Nyayayikas, the Sankhya, Yoga, Mimamsa, and the Vedanta. The Mimamsa and the Vedanta are really based completely on the Vedas themselves. The Mimamsa on the first part of the Vedas, the Karbhakanya, the Vedanta on the Upanishads. And so those are their scripture. Whereas the Sankhya and Yoga, they accept the Vedas as a Pramana. They feel like their system is able to establish what they want to say logically. The Sankhya and Yoga accept that. And the Vaisheshika and the Vaisheshika and Nyayayikas are really the ones who have established the most sophisticated form of logic in India. Nyaya is logic. Mm. And the Vaisheshikas break everything, the whole universe, down into ultimate particles.
So they're like these atomists.
They're atomists, yeah. All of them...
And then the Sankhyas are like dualists. They say there's, on the one hand, Purusha, consciousness, and on the other hand, there's matter, essentially, Prakriti. And there's these two parallel universes that
many
don't really
Purushas,
meet.
Exactly. Many Purushas, each one is pure, limitless, conscious being. And that's one reality, many Purushas. And then there's the Prakriti that's responsible for matter, for the manifestation of the creation, manifestation of the Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas that manifests as this creation. That's also a reality. So Satya Mitya.
So that's why you have to disentangle yourself from the Prakriti.
Yes.
And then just reside, abide in the Purusha,
as
and
Purusha.
Then you're free.
Yeah. You have to bring your whole Prakriti into a state of total acquiescence so that it's not providing any experience at all. If it's providing an experience, the Purusha experiences that. So they also get some sort of confusion of knowership. That's knowership in the Purusha, even though they won't say that, certain things don't make any sense unless you attribute knowership to the Purusha. That's why it's logically that it has a lot of problems. Mm. Yeah.
But it's like the closest to Vedanta in a certain way.
In a certain way. In some ways, Buddhism is closer to Vedanta. In some ways, the...
He also goes through, defeats the Baudas here as well?
Probably. We have to get to it. I don't know. I think he does go through all of them. Yeah, I think he goes through all of them.
Yeah. But not the Jains. He doesn't go through the Jains.
I don't think so. I'm not positive, though. I don't remember, because I haven't done this with Swamiji for several years. But we have gone through it several times, but I don't remember.
So, of the Sadarshanams...
Sadarshan.
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 Uh-huh.
The,
Shud.
Shud.
Six.
Okay,
Shuddarshanas, yeah.
there's still some version of Samkhya around. And
yes,
Jayan certainly, but the other ones seem to have like faded into the
history. Pretty much. The Samkhya yoga is there because yoga and Samkhya are attached to each other. The yoga can be used independently, but they're attached to each other. So Samkhya is still as kind of existing. Not much.
To the extent that there are yoga practitioners who really
definitely,
get into that.
Yeah,
like if you go up to Mount Madonna,
there's
this yogi fellow, very nice. Very nice guru.
Baba Hari
Das.
He's not a yogi.
But he teaches the Samkhya stuff in great detail.
Yeah.
It's quite amazing.
Yeah.
I went up there once and he's silent. He doesn't talk, but he had on the blackboard all the
Mahatmas and all that. But that's just outlining how the Prakriti manifests, you know? How Prakriti Maya manifests, etc., religious manifests, that accounts for all of our experiences. So we've probably gone into a lot of detail. I mean, they have their own Shastra, you know. They have their major texts. I have some of them here, actually. Yeah, and I mean, the whole detailed way they account for the manifestation of the creation is very similar to what we say. In terms of Maya, it's just that Maya is mithya. And for them, the Prakriti is itself an existent, is a reality. For us, the whole creation is mithya. They don't have that category mithya.
It all comes down to mithya, as the key character.
Mithya, satya, it's the whole thing. There's no Advaita without mithya. Because how would we account for all of this?
Sakya, Rajas, and Tamas, that whole concept, they attribute it to Sakya or to...
No, the Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas is there. It's even in the Upanishads, but the Sankhya takes the Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas as Prakriti, as being real, real.
Okay.
And for us, the Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, Maya, is Mithya.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a huge difference. So they're dualists. I mean, you couldn't be more dual than Sankhya. It's impossible. I don't know how you could get more dual than that. Yeah.
There is still some, like in Western philosophy, some of these guys who, it's like the Cartesian duality, right, between mind and
body
consciousness
yeah.
and the material world.
Yeah.
It's a little like that, maybe.
Yeah. The only thing is, in the India, conscious of the mind and everything, you know, and knowership, all of these type of things are looked at as part of the creation. Which I think that is not done so well in the West.
Mm-hmm.
Where matter would include the conscious manifestation,
mm-hmm.
the manifestation of consciousness in the mind and the sense organs is accounted for as matter. Or as mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems like the Western philosophies as a whole have a tough time with consciousness.
They do.
It's burned us out.
Some of them don't even accept it exists.
Yeah, they deny it.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not there.
Not there at all. Okay, so we're going to have what they... Today was Sunday, so we'll have class on Thursday and Saturday, and then I'll be at the farm. And so we'll have, you're all welcome to come to the farm, of course, it's always, after camp.
The fires are...